My dear friends, the most important document of our country, next to the Constitution, is a document called the Declaration of Independence. Independence has been a beloved word among our people since the beginning of its history. Independence forever was the dying words of John Adams. And in his eulogy of Adams and Jefferson, Daniel Webster declared, "It is my living sentiment, and by the blessing of God, it shall be my dying sentiment. Independence now and independence forever." And the same word, the same slogan, independence, has been the powerful battle cry of many nations, especially in the last 200 years, in all parts of the world. And the challenge of that word independence and the passionate urgency of it are still clamorous in our own day, in Asia, in Africa, everywhere, where imperialism and colonialism still exist. This demand for national independence has led to many uprisings and revolutions and wars. At this very moment, fierce fighting is raging in Algeria, and a very serious international crisis has resulted from the bombing in Tunisia over this very issue of national independence. Now, this doctrine of the sovereign rights of peoples to be masters in their own home, free from foreign domination, has, I believe, been nigh universally accepted in our day. Here and there, one still finds pockets of resistance, of course, where colonialism is fighting, as it were, a rearguard action to save what can be saved from the inevitable final and total withdrawal. And occasionally, some late and tempestuous arrival on the international scene, like Mussolini and Hitler, will make an attempt, as they did make, a fearful attempt, to turn back the clock, as it were, and to construct in this late day, through conquest, an empire. Imperialism is absolutely necessary, declared Mussolini, to a people which desires spiritual as well as economic expansion. He failed, of course, in Northern Africa, failed in Ethiopia, and as the Nazis failed in Central and Eastern Europe, because the world had ceased to think imperially, to use the phrase of Joseph Chamberlain. Imperialism had become a political anachronism. And so I say that it's now universally accepted today, this concept of national independence. But evidently this concept is also not enough, or our world would not be in the terrible plight turmoil and upheaval in which it finds itself today. Independence, national independence, is a sound concept, but evidently not a sufficient concept for the new world in which we live. Because like imperialism and colonialism, nationally independent, they also lead and frequently has led to war. Small nations have their own rivalries. And like great empires, they also have, many of them, expansionist ambitions. And the world's power blocks are not averse to use or to manipulate these independent, sovereign, small states, frequently with their knowledge and consent, in such a way as to serve their own, that is, these power blocks' own vital interests. For example, these small, free, and independent Arab states in the Middle East are a case in point, where their very independence is exploited by themselves and by others to achieve objectives which are not always peaceful. It has become clear that the peace of the world cannot rest upon the concept of national independence and cannot be ensured by the establishment merely of additional independent states. The whole concept of independence must be raised to a higher level of national interdependence, and the world community organized under law must ensure that these independent sovereign states adjust their differences in such a way as to avoid international conflicts and war. Absolute independence, insofar as it spells willfulness or isolationism, is today an antiquated concept. It can no longer be tolerated. History has moved beyond it to the concept of an international society. An international society of free and independent nations, adjusting their sovereignties and their prerogatives to the common vital needs of all. And that, my dear friend, is the real meaning of the term independence. To be truly independent is to be mutually dependent. And this is the essential truth also which our Brotherhood Week, now being observed all over this country, seeks to stress. The essential truth applicable in this instance to group relationships, to the relationships between races and between religions. There can be no true brotherhood in the world among races and religions unless the spiritual independence of each race and of each religion is acknowledged and recognized and granted basic equality under law. And once this basic equality is acknowledged, these diverse groups, in spite of their persistent differences, can move forward to discover many ways of cooperation among themselves without sacrificing their differences, their identities, without submergence, without assimilation. There was a time, and it is not yet over, when religions claimed independence and sovereignty for themselves and denied it to other religions, and in fact regarded other religions as their enemies, enemies that should be disabled, enemies that should be destroyed. It was an imperialistic independence claimed by certain religions who believed themselves to be in the possession of the absolute truth and therefore regarded themselves as possessing the absolute right to hem in, to hedge in, to disable, to destroy all other religions which differed from them. This is also true of races who arrogated to themselves all manner of superiority and accordingly felt justified in enslaving, in exploiting, in annihilating other races whom they first branded as inferior. But through long and sad and costly experiences, mankind has been growing wiser. We have been living in this kind of a world which is progressively becoming smaller and closer. We have been discovering the interdependence of all races and of all religions. No race can prosper at the expense of any other race for long. And all religions face a common challenge and must unite for a common defense against the forces of materialism and anti-religion rampant in the world. And here again, the concept of independence is being sublimated to that of interdependence. And what is true of nations and of races and of religions is true also of individual men and women. We all want to be independent. And not only in a financial sense, that is the simplest kind of independence that people often think of. We all want to run our own lives. Each of us wishes to be the lord of himself and accountable to none, to quote Poor Richard's almanac. Below the smiles and below the frowns of kings, as it were. We do not wish to be ordered about, be pushed about. We do not wish to be in bondage to anyone. We want to be free. And we crave not only the freedom from want, but also the freedom from dictation. We want to lead our own lives, pursue our own happiness in our own way. We want to make our own decisions, be guided by our own judgments. If necessary, make our own mistakes. We fret under all forms of restraint, at times even the legitimate restraints of duty and responsibility. This craving for independence is a legitimate one and may be the source of much good for the individual, for it may help him to grow up into full maturity. But it may be frightfully abused and may lead to spiritual disaster and to great unhappiness. Some people interpret independence as a sort of an insolent self-assertiveness, a stubbornness and a contentiousness to assert oneself by being different. Now, just to be different does not mean to be independent. be different for the sake of being noticed is not a high form of moral independence. To tell the story of a little community in Eastern Europe in need of a new spiritual leader, a new rabbi. And they sent a delegation to visit some of the larger cities to inquire as to a likely candidate for the vacant post of the rabbi in this community. And they finally found one, a man of great scholarship, a fine reputation. And they brought back a unanimous report to the community. And a public meeting was held to which all the members of the Jewish community were invited to vote upon and to elect this eminent rabbi who would be the adornment of this community. And when the committee presented his report, a motion was made to elect this rabbi. And the vote was taken, and it was unanimous, except for one. One voice was heard from the rear of the synagogue where the meeting was held, a negative voice: "I say no." And everybody turned around to see who that person was, and they found a little old cobbler, a shoester in town, who was voting no against a better judgment of all the recognized leaders of the community. And they turned to him in indignation and said, "Shmuel, how can you vote against this noted rabbi?" And he said, "Well, all my life nobody paid any attention to me. Nobody noticed me. Here I have an opportunity finally to be noticed, and I say no." And very often you will find certain individuals who, out of a sense of inferiority, will take positions of non-cooperation and contentiousness and negativism, not out of conviction, not out of a sense of principle, but simply to be noticed. Now, no man is an island unto himself. Famous Hillel, the great rabbi, said, "Nuchashani le'atzmi, if I am for myself only, ma'ani, what am I?" That is true of the humblest and true of the greatest of men. If you are for yourself only, you are nothing. No one can be entirely independent of his fellow men, of his community, of his environment, of his family, of his friends, of his past, and no one should try. No one can be independent by uprooting himself and removing himself from the life and culture of his group, of his people, the people in whose midst he was born and reared. A tree cut off from its roots becomes a dead trunk. It is no longer a living tree. Al tifrosh min hatzibur, do not separate yourself from the community, is a famous dictum of the rabbis. No one is really independent in isolation. No one is independent in an ivory tower of self-withdrawal. He only becomes lonely. He is alone, and it is not good for man to be alone. Sometimes we are most independent when we become most dependent. I'd like you to think of that. The man, for example, puts his utter reliance not upon himself, his own powers, but upon God, becomes amazingly free and independent from all the world's petulant demands and vexations. It was the great Yehuda Halevi, the poet and philosopher of the Middle Ages, who said, "Avdei Hazman, those who are the slaves of time, Eved Avadimim, they are the slaves of slaves. Eved Adonai, only the slave of God. Hu levado chofshi, he alone is free." But that is a profound truth. Complete dependence of God makes man completely independent of the world of men and of their just, unjust claims and demands. Be'elohim batachti, we read in the psalm, that beautiful Psalm 56. Be'elohim batachti, I put my trust in God. Lo ira, I shall not be afraid ever. Ma yase adamli, what can man do to me? There is a complete dependence which makes possible complete and confident independence. The man, for example, who becomes dependent upon and completely dedicated to some great ideal, to some worthy cause, that man becomes blessed with a desirable and ennobling and sustaining dependency, which will uphold him in times of adversity, which will nourish his life and be the bread and wine of his daily existence. In a sense, of course, the idealist becomes the slave of his ideal. The ideal makes demands upon him. He is called upon to make frequent sacrifices in its behalf. But no one is as free and as independent of the opinions and the prejudices of people about him as a man who has a great cause to which he has dedicated himself. Dependent upon that ideal, dedicated, consecrated to it, he becomes, in a real sense, spiritually independent and free. A man or woman who loves deeply becomes dependent upon the object of his or her love. There's no doubt about it. No one is independent who is nobly committed in love. In fact, selflessness is the first and the supreme criterion of true love. True love between man and woman, between husband and wife, between parents and children, is a bridge over which we pass from independence to interdependence, to mutual concern, to mutual devotion, to mutual helpfulness. And that is the criterion of real love. It transcends independence, sublimates it to a higher level of voluntary interdependence. That is true also of a man or a woman who takes pride in what they're doing, whatever it is, in perfecting themselves in their art, in their craftsmanship, in their profession, who dedicate themselves to the development of their talent, whatever it be, in whatever field, for the joy and the satisfaction of doing the best that they are capable of, not in relation to the monetary remuneration which may or may not accrue. Such a man or such a woman stands in a soul-satisfying relationship of what is eternally valid and beautiful. They are co-workers of God. They become independent by becoming completely dependent upon that which they are doing and trying to create and mold into something true and fine and beautiful. Uvacharta b'chaim, choose thou life. The rabbis say that that means umanut, craftsmanship, art. That is the way to choose life, full life, an independent life. By loving that which you are doing and seeking to perfect yourself in what you are doing. That is how a man becomes independent. For his concern then is not with what people are saying about him, or what the rewards will come. His concern now is with the object of his craftsmanship. A man who lives up to the standards which he himself acknowledges, who remains faithful to the disciplines of life which he sets for himself, the man who follows through regardless, who stands up against the pressures which are frequently hard to resist, the man who does not cater to the mob, who does not retreat on the threat, whose faithful heart is, as it were, a fortress. The man who, to quote Hillel again, in kom she'ein anashim hishtadeli yotish, where there are no men, he tries to be the man. That man is truly independent, even though his financial resources may be very limited. That's an independent man. And contrariwise, he who is the slave of his passions, of his appetites, of his wayward desires and impulses, the man who craves honors and recks not the cost which he must pay for them in integrity, in intellectual honesty, in moral consistency, the man who evades his social responsibilities and runs away from obligations, the man who tries to run with the hound and hunt with the hunters, that man is never independent, even though his strong box may be choked full of stocks and bonds and all manners of security. The truly independent man is the one who is able to say, and I refer now to that beautiful Psalm 26 which I read to you this morning, the man who is able to say, life has not always been easy for me. There have been many disappointments, many frustrations, many dark moments. Ani betumi halachti. But I have walked in mine integrity. Ragli amda amishor. My foot stood in the straight path. And in this way I have sought to repay to the Lord all his bountiful good towards me. That's an independent man. Now this age of ours, in spite of the material independence which comes to more and more people, and economic security assured to many by government pensions and by all forms of protection, this age of ours tends to undermine the independence of men and women. This is an age of propaganda, when interested groups, organizations, and governments seek to take hold of our minds and to mold them to suit their purposes. There was never a time in the history of mankind with so much cunningly planned propaganda on the part of so many vested interests are making an onslaught upon the intellectual integrity and independence of the individual man and woman. So many hidden persuasions working to undermine the citadel of man's intellectual independence. In this age of ours, when vast governments have really taken over the individual, forms of dictatorship which are not merely political, but which reach into every nook and crevice of human life. And a small group of men at the top wish to dictate how people should think and what they should think and how they should feel about situations in life. In such an age, it is of utmost importance for men and women who want to exercise their God-given right of being independent, of being themselves, personalities themselves in their own right. It is of utmost importance that men and women should train themselves deliberately to assess propaganda, to screen and to sift what is put before them. To analyze, to be able to analyze, not to accept the headline judgment and the opinions which are blasted at us from radios and televisions, from 1,000 other sources. It is of utmost importance for people to learn to think critically, analytically, discriminatingly, rejecting what is not the whole truth, refusing to accept the half-truth or the half-lie, refusing to move along with an ass which had been previously worked upon and whose judgments have been predetermined. We must guard the integrity of our own judgments. That's what I speak of, how to be independent. The most important thing in life, to guard the independence of our own ethical and moral and social judgments. Someday I hope there will be introduced in the free countries of the world, in our high schools and our colleges and universities, systematic courses to train the rising generation to guard itself against the undermining of the human mind. It isn't that we have enough schools and colleges. It isn't that people are not being given education, but in many instances, they're given a certain kind of education, which a certain group wishes them to have in order to exploit them. How to be independent? The answer is a simple one: to learn to be completely dependent upon truth, upon basic human values, and not to be pushed around by organized bodies which seek to use us for their own purposes. It is good to want to be financially independent. There's nothing to be said in favor of poverty or want. But there are other forms of independence which are vital to the happiness of a human being. And that we must strive for, reach out for, with all the energies which a good God has put in our minds and in our spirits. Amen.